And then to shift this around, they have 7 transmitters in the Soviet Union's pretty big country, so they could tip the axis of this and hit other parts of the world. Most of their experiments have been done changing the axis of this red circle route to hit areas of the Earth where they're earthquake prone. Like the first big experiment was on China, where if this is the Himalayas here, for example, and China is over about here, they ran their signal right to a great known earthquake fault. And we still have no real explanation as to why this very low strength, very low frequency signal will in time loosen up an earthquake fault and it'll slip. And the great Iranian earthquakes, which are on the same line about here, this being the Himalayas here, are also caused by the Soviet signal. The whole, you know, geometry of this particular signal. But, if you're on none of the main path, the effects aren't very strong, although they're still there. But Buffalo, as far as I remember, has never been on the main route of Soviet experimentation. But if you tune in your shortwave radio, at a certain frequency, it's like a woodpecker signal or a machine gun fire. You can pick it up, but that's not the... It still is effective. I don't want to mislead you. But it's not as effective as on the main path of the standing wave. Because there are a lot of complex characters to this standing wave. For example, you get a PACE journal, don't you? Well, remember, you first people report the Belle Island incident where what essentially happened is this kind of standing wave was going over the Belle Isle area, and huge, what's called Tesla columns, I mean, like 100 million volt potentials exist, but oscillating between the Earth and some point the ionosphere above it. And one of these high potential things built up to a kind of a ball of lightning, which was seen visually by the people on the ground. It hit the ground and it punctured in solid granite, holes that deep and that big across, exactly triangular shape. And that is one of the things that you get at a high intensity point. Everything was vaporized in the area where that thing hit. And it was actually seen coming in for several miles as a ball. Now the same balls have been reported over South Africa. I don't know if you're aware of that, but you read the New York Times religiously every day, you'll see that in a little one-inch box, the same kind of balls have been seen over South Africa. And all the buzz around the world is that South Africa has the nuclear bomb. It's a lot of baloney. What happens is the U.S. has a major ELF transmitter in South Africa. It's no big secret if you talk to South Africans, as I have, that it's there. And it's our experiments that have caused the same thing down there the Soviet experiments have caused in the Belle Isle incident and other places. The estate of Tesla went to his cousin, who's a fellow named Kosanovich, who happened to be the first ambassador from Yugoslavia to the United States. So after World War II, Kosanovich came here, and because I'm Yugoslav, he got hold of me and asked me to help retrieve the stuff from the FBI. And after a lot of searching, we finally located the stuff, and it was shipped back to Yugoslavia in about 1954. And it went into a museum there, and so anybody in the world can study it. So the Soviets, that's part of their job, is intelligence. So they went to the museum and they got photocopies of everything they could get their hands on, took it back to the Soviet Union. And they had some very bright guys who realized this guy was no fool, as Americans had thought about a lot of this stuff. And they went ahead and put the money into it and built it. Okay, so that's the whole story in a nutshell.
What are the Americans doing about all this?
Well, I mentioned that earlier. There is a full-scale program now, but only after a number of us civilians, the military never caught on to what was going on. They thought this was what's called over-the-horizon radar, long waves that bounce back off the ionosphere. They were totally misled and misinformed about what was going on. And when we told them what we thought it was, they got angry at us because we're not supposed to upgrade, you know, upstage their knowledge. And so we all got in a lot of trouble with this. But as I said, it's all been confirmed now after 5 years of very intense research that all these things I'm telling you, not just our own interpretation, but it's been the cost of billions of dollars of U.S. taxpayers' money, they found out that essentially what we said is true about Soviet weapon development.
Was the shift that we've seen in the last 2 years to admitting Soviet military superiority part of the process of admitting technological advance?
I would say yes. But that's a different area. There are different problems in the military. One of them is if you let off a lot of nuclear bombs at once, you create what's called giant electromagnetic pulses, EMPs. And EMPs wipe out all communication systems, particularly any of those built on transistors and other solid-state devices. So all communication, including satellite communication, would be wiped out in a major confrontation. So the military is trying to find methods, something like this, which we have something called Project Seafarer, which the American public has rightfully been fighting to communicate with underwater craft and around the Earth, because the electromagnetic pulse will not knock out this kind of long wave system. It's a whole different branch of, that's different technology entirely, although it uses the same equipment. Yes, how are you? Way back there, Thelma.
Doctor, knowing what we know, what you have shared with us, wouldn't it behoove us to share with all those that we touch and form groups in a thought process of meditation?
Absolutely. I'm speaking not because I need to speak. I mean, I do this as service. And I hope that I touch each one of you deeply and convince you that what I'm saying is really true and not just some ego trip that I'm on. And the more you can share this, the better it is. Now, somebody asked me when I got here whether they could videotape what I said yesterday. And I said, absolutely not, because what I say to a small group, when you see it on television, looks terrible and it could be, you can destroy your credibility immediately. So if I want to videotape what I'm saying, I'm going to set it up properly with well-prepared graphics and documentation and a lot of authority and not just my say-so. But that's a different thing. If I had the opportunity, I don't think I could get on this show for any amount of money or pressure, because what I'm saying is the public, the American government particularly, and the other governments of the Western Alliance are all in alignment with this policy, don't want this kind of thing said publicly, because they don't want people raising questions of the military, what are they doing about it, and why are they so behind, etc., etc. Because Reagan is trying to convince us that, at least on the nuclear front, the Soviets are way ahead of us. And of course, that's a dubious statement if you read all the political and military analysis of that statement. But he is right in saying that they are way ahead of us in this one area, and he's the first president. Jimmy Carter didn't do a damn thing about it, even though I had a hand-delivered report sent to him, because his science advisor, Frank Press, I don't know if you know him, was kind of a dodo. He's a geography teacher from MIT, and all this stuff goes over his head. So the whole terrible story, and there's a man, I don't know, is Lonnie Hutkins here? Anyway, he's privy to all the U.S. Work in this area. Anyway, nothing was done, but Reagan did go ahead, and as soon as he got in, he ordered full speed ahead to find out what we can do to counter this, so we've got to give him credit for that. But the government in general wants to say it their way and not have individuals like me, who are not part of government policy, who, you know, all of which is carefully tailored and coached. They give you just what they think you can handle and so on and so on. You know, if you've been in policy, you know what comes out. It's homogenized nothing. So anyway, I don't think, as I say, I've been suppressed in a very positive way. I don't think I could get on a network show.
Well, you might make cable.
What?
Cable. Huh? You could get on cable, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, you could get on cable. But if you're going to do something, you want to do it well.
No, you could do it well.
Yeah.
You could
let me tell you what I mean by well. I have a certain standard. When I first got involved with this whole business, as I told you at the beginning, with my watch, right? I was asked as a part of whether I would work with these people, and after I checked them out and I felt they were good guys, and that was my personal responsibility, I said, yes, I would do what they want me to do. And they said, what they want to do is the following. They want me to try to reach 3/4 of the people in the industrial Western world. I said, well, how about the rest of the world? I said, don't worry, the natives know already. You don't have to tell them, but it's modern man who's a little blind. So I took that on and answered your question very directly. And it took a lot of money and about 2.5 years' work. We covered 59 countries, which covers all the industrial countries of the world. We were on every television show we could get on. There wasn't a country, civilized country, that didn't get exposed to the whole thing. Best thing we could say, you know, we can't say everything, especially in short shows. And anyway, and we published a book which, I don't know how many countries, I know it's in 23 languages, but I don't know how many countries that got to, and we, thousands of magazine articles. That's what I mean by really going to the public. And I've done it once. To do this with the ELF business, I tried to do the same thing. I did go to Europe, I did go to Canada, I did go to Mexico, America, but the intelligence people were on my tail and it was uphill fighting. First time I caught them without their being aware of what was going on, but this time it was too late, especially I was talking about military. The stuff we were talking about, metal bending and extraterrestrials, could be laughed off as nonsense. But when you talk about military stuff, and you've got 10 intelligence guys in the audience, each taping it and analyzing it and so on, they don't want you to say these things. It's very difficult. So if I were going to do it, I would orchestrate it to just saturate the whole world. It would take about 2 years and all my time. And I can't afford that kind of time, not a PR person.
What was the book you were referring to?
What?
The book that you were referring to. Which book were you referring to?
Uri, just the one. Other people wrote about Uri, but it was all put-down stuff. I just might add, and this is an aside, but just to fill out the picture. It's a terrible story, but it's absolutely true. I told some of the people at the break, that's why I'm bringing it up. When Uri was working at SRI, being tested, being a guinea pig in a laboratory, a strange thing happened which we've never written about, because it wasn't safe to write about it. But in the room upstairs, where Uri was working from the lab upstairs, was a new computer system called the ARPA network. ARPA stands for Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is the research arm of the Department of Defense. And when Uri was working and bending things and levitating things and all that stuff, the computer upstairs was down. Power supplies were burning out, tapes were glitching, programs were being scrambled, etc. It was so bad that SRI had to call ARPA in Washington to send out some experts. The experts came out and they examined the system, and it just shouldn't be. I mean, this shouldn't have happened. And somebody made the bright connection because, you know, in the university or industrial research lab, everybody's in his own little cubbyhole. Nobody knows what anybody else is doing. But somebody remembered that there was a Israeli kid downstairs who was doing weird things, and maybe he was influencing the computer. To make a long story short, and I was privy to all this when it went on, within a week, it had been decided in Washington that this guy was real, and he's got to be laughed out of existence. For some reason or other, they decided not to shoot him. That would be the usual course of the event, just get rid of this guy. But somehow they figured they could handle it by ridicule. And I know absolutely what I'm telling you is absolutely true. They hired Time Magazine, Scientific American, a whole bunch of professors from National Academy of Science who I could name, and including an idiot magician called Randy and a group in Buffalo. I'm sure you're not proud of them, called the Psychops Group. And all these idiots were turned loose to discredit Geller, myself, Ed Mitchell, SRI. And literally, we have a file, thousands of articles were written telling everybody we're a bunch of fools and idiots and conmen we were. And if you go out in on a bus or a train or somebody and ask 100 people what they think of Uri Geller, absolutely 95% will say, well, he's a fake. Randy proved that. I mean, that's the power of Madison Avenue. And I know all the people involved in all these magazines and so on, personally, a lot of interaction. Yet while all this was going on to discredit Geller, the Secret Service came to me privately and said, look, we're really worried about this guy Geller. What could he do to the hotline between Moscow and Washington? Could he influence the Colorado network for anti-nuclear defense and so on? And I said, well, this was in 1974. I said, well, if he wanted to, he could, but he's not really interested. But I'll tell you, he's not the problem. I said, ever since we finished our tour of all of Europe and a lot of other countries, you know, there are thousands of other people just like Uri Geller. And he's been in Finland, some kid in Finland who can bend metal, is probably living in a house right over the hotline. And we may be on the toilet and grunt hard in the... It's too late, it's out of control. Well, to finish that story, and it's hard to be maligned when you're innocent, believe me, especially if you're a scientist, where the only thing that's important is truth. It's very hard to live with it, and I lived with it because I figured maybe it'll do us more good in the long run to be looked upon in schools and be taken seriously in a kind of roundabout way. But right now, if all of you, you probably don't follow this closely, but there are magazines that you read like Omni. Omni is strictly a front magazine paid for by the same people who paid for Time and Scientific American and all these magazines to run us down. If you have noticed, since May of this year, they've all reversed 180 degrees. They're now pro-UFOs, they're pro-telepathy, they're pro-metal bending. And why? Because somebody in Washington told these ponies to, you know, turn around the other way. And why is that? Because I told you, the big push in Washington now is to make everything to do with psychic phenomena respectable. I don't know, some of you are very close here to Lilydale, I'm sure. And I picked up a story in the New York Times, which is very highly laudatory, of Lilydale. Now, you know that's never happened in 100 years. It's the same Madison Avenue approach. Anything that's psychic is now going to be supported because the U.S. military wants to scoop up all the psychics they can and use them. I don't know how many of you who are psychics here have been approached, but I can tell you at least a dozen psychics that are very well known already working for the U.S. government on various military projects of one kind or another. So the whole bulk came to turn around 180 degrees. So I'm not a hero yet, I'm still a bum. Like the Soviets, I'll be resurrected, you know? Anyway, that's all aside from the main theme, but I thought it might give you a little perspective on what's going on or why I haven't spoken out about this pot material for the last 11 years. If I put my head above the parapet just that high, it would be shot off at this kind of material. And I'm not giving this kind of paper at scientific meetings, obviously. I can only go to the people who understand, people like yourself, who understand the spiritual side of human nature. So I hope that this will slowly spread and answer your question by word of mouth. This time we're going to bypass all the great controlled organs of news dissemination like NBC and CBS and all that stuff. I don't know whether you're aware of it, but all those great news organizations are totally under the control of our federal government. It's a terrible story. As you know, William Paley was exposed about 6 years ago to being the chief agent of the CIA. And he fired a guy on his staff who wrote the article. But Paley is still in there and still calling the shots. And I know that's absolutely true. The government will call up Paley and say, look, we want you to slant this particular piece of news, whether it's Israel or Lebanon or anything, a little way. And the people underneath don't know what's going on, but they find going, they're going through editors who are changing the story ever so slightly to give it the right shape. That's the way you live.
I wasn't fortunate enough to do it yesterday. You keep moving to the watch, and you know, so you try. 1 minute to say what you mean, and you know, I don't know what you're saying because I didn't hear you yesterday.
Okay, I will give anyone in the summary. Then we'll terminate this meeting. And it's kind of cute. All right, what I said yesterday was the following. Number one, since 1971, somebody up there in the sky, and I'll try to find who it was, moves my watch, starts it and stops it. It took me 3.5 years to decipher what the stopping and starting was. It turned out there was a code. I cracked the code, and the code is telling me, and then I'm telling you, what's going to happen to the Earth for the next 20 years. Now, I did not say anything to anybody for the first 7 years that I could really reliably practice codes. And it was predicting events during those seven years, so I would check my words, all of which were the Hebrew words, incidentally, against what actually happened. Earthquakes, volcanoes, mostly weather phenomena, okay? And it turned out to be 100% correct. So at this seminar, I'm going to read out the whole history as given to me by somebody in the sky that I've never seen, who does it through my watches, what is going to happen in any country for the next 20 years, okay?
Well, I think we're going to
Now maybe you could explain in the succeeding session what that means, or maybe somebody else will interpret it. That's unfair, but that's the best I can condense the whole thing. And all the questions today that you heard were in reference to some of the things that I said yesterday, which unfortunately are not traditional, they're not out of a stockpile of ideas that we have, they're very foreign to our way of thinking. But I spent a long time yesterday trying to convince everybody that I did not jump to any hasty conclusions. I spent 11 years studying this, and I pass it on as being at least as accurate as anything that goes through a human being. I've had a check, cross-check, and experiment, and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, one last question.
Was there any connection between the stage that originally worked with Uriel and then the code that was created? Was it just Hebrew language? Was it just a coincidence?
No, not coincidence, no. It's a little hard to explain, but the things that it predicted that were going to happen, okay? And I know this is going to be very hard for any of you to even comprehend. Did not happen because of coincidence or because of foresight to see what's really going to happen. They happened because somebody made it happen. It was made to happen because it was a cycle of human evolution that demanded that sort of thing happen. Let me explain. I mentioned it briefly yesterday, but let me punch it. If you remember, let me just draw a little funny map here. This is the eastern coast of North America. This is Florida. This is the Gulf of Mexico. This is the Yucatan. And this is Guatemala. Remember the first prediction I mentioned is February 4th, a giant earthquake in Guatemala. There's opposite the Guatemala, the Cayman Islands, and above Cayman Islands, see if I'm getting all this straight, here's Cuba over here, and Jamaica's down here, roughly, okay? So all of you know that the Gulf Stream follows a course like this. It comes from the coast of Africa, goes into the Gulf area across this neck here, and gets heated up here, goes here, goes across here, and disappears there. This is a lot of hot water making Europe habitable. This little point here is the Mediterranean Ocean. Africa is here, Norway, British Isles, French, Bay of Biscay, Spain, okay? Now, when this earthquake happened here, it was a terrible earthquake in terms of local disaster. Number of people killed, made homeless, buildings destroyed, etc. But the earthquake occurred across an area which is one of the deep points of the earth. It's about 25,000 feet here. Now, if you wanted to control all the weather of Europe and you knew what's going on, all you have to do is either drop a bomb here, it's very simple, and you could change the entire climate of Europe because you cut down the amount of hot water flowing, or you could have an earthquake, which would be a very precise little valve, which would open the earth a certain amount or close it, because all the heat coming in here really comes up from the hot part of the earth. It passes over certain cracks here. So when that occurred, and this was in 1976, February 1976, the climate changed drastically for all of Europe. It became much colder here. The rains and floods, they had snow in winter, things that haven't happened for hundreds of years. And the weather belts across all of Europe became very peculiar. You had dry spells here in the summer, you had wet spells here, you had super dry spells across Russia, which ruined their grain crop, etc. So what I'm saying is, when you analyze what the clock says, what happened, somebody knew where to turn the control valve and influence a whole bunch of things up here. To say nothing of all the things that happened on the west coast. We had the driest spells here because all the air jet stream, instead of going this way, went all the way up to Canada and came down and pumped its moisture here. So with a very slight scientific knowledge and a slight effect, you can control everything on the earth very simply, okay? So I'm saying that these things were in effect done, engineered, but taking advantage of known situation and things that are also predicted, like children coming, that's all planned, engineered by somebody else, not us. See, mankind has never been allowed to know these things. I think it's a bad policy. I think if these things are done, are true, man should know. I think it makes you feel good that you've got a lot of attention and cooperation out there, not just being a little animal running around and being totally at the mercy of everything. But for some reason or other, I think wise people have always known these things, but somehow they can never get their idea across to the public, because if you're Socrates who said these things, or Pythagoras, or somebody, you always wind up getting your head chopped off for saying these things. The only exception of a guy who knew what was going on and said it was somebody like Einstein. I don't know why, but in the few people who said the radical thing and somehow got honored for it, very much the exception. It's always the other way around. Okay, I think we better get the cafeteria closed. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
What happened with the weather now? Let's just start with the cause of the weather changes. If you listen to the meteorologists and their explanation as to why the weather has gone bonkers and caused a lot of economic and personal loss, the only explanation they've come up with is that there's been a shift in the jet stream. But you have to remember that a shift in a jet stream is an effect, it's not a cause, because you still haven't explained why the jet stream shifted. Now, we also have to distinguish between man-made causes of weather changes, and I don't know how closely you follow the scientific literature, but more and more and more evidence builds up that the greenhouse effect is real. It means simply that the atmosphere traps heat from the sun and doesn't re-radiate or bounce out into space. And it caused a whole series of effects. And then I mentioned the Soviet efforts in manipulating the weather. And then I also mentioned, if you remember, the third effect, which is somebody who guides the destiny of mankind, and I've given some indication who that may be, are also involved in the weather changes. So let me just give you a kind of a very simplified anatomy of what's going on with the weather. The Earth. There are weather effects that start inside the Earth. And what are these due to? They're due to heat inside the Earth. And the Earth's heat tends to escape. Now, from the esoteric point of view, we all know that the Earth is just as much a living thing as we are. The natives and the ancients and people seem to have known this throughout history, except in modern times we just think it's something to exploit, dig a hole in it and pull out some mineral or oil or whatever. But the Earth, and we're little pimples on the Earth as you know, absorbs the negative energy. You know about cleansing with water, etc., where when you cleanse a person with water, you do take away the negative energy, but it always goes back where? Into the Earth, and then goes up through the cycle in the air and gets purified and comes down again. And that affects the weather of a whole portion of the Earth, or different parts of the Earth. So think of a primary cause of weather changes being from the interior of the Earth. And that started, again, as I said yesterday, in 1976, coincidental with the Russian experiments of pumping energy into the Earth, what we call ELF. And the ELF sets up a small vibration, like a low-frequency subway rumble in the Earth, and that loosens these plates, and that allows heat and hot magma to come out, and that affects the weather, things like the Gulf Stream. So, 1976, if you look in the record books, 1977, one of the worst years we've had for earthquakes since records began to be kept about 200 years ago. Very few people realize that something like 1.5 million people were killed just in that 1 year from earthquakes alone. Of course, the worst one was one in Tangshan, China. So that's cause number one. Cause number two is the envelope of the Earth made up of gases. And these gases are in order. Near Earth, we have a lot of nitrogen and oxygen. And as we go up, it becomes more and more rarefied. And we have nitrous oxides, which usually come from emissions from hydrocarbon fuels. And we have an ozone layer, which absorbs the sun. The ultraviolet rays coming in and prevents the deadly effects of ultraviolet from messing living things up, and of course has a certain effect on weather. But what's happened as we burn billions and billions and billions of tons of hydrocarbons, we have nitrous oxides up here, NO, and I'll just put an H here for the number of oxygen, which have a catalytic effect on the ozone layer. The nitrous oxide, one molecule of nitrous oxide can destroy in a matter of seconds some 15,000 molecules of ozone. Ozone is O3. And that, there's been a very concerted effort by the World Meteorological Organization to find out just how much the ozone layer is being depleted. And since records started in 1977, we've had a 6% decrease of ozone. A 6% increase is enough to increase the incidence of cancer, not just of skin, but of all kinds. And the statistics bear that out, that there's been a marked increase, as you probably all know, in cancer. So appears cancer and it's going up. But those same effects bring a lot of carbon dioxide up here, carbon dioxide CO2. And this layer of carbon dioxide allows the sun's energy to come in, but it doesn't allow it to bounce back in space. So the general feeling is, even though we've had more violent weather, you know, Buffalo is a good place to talk about this, extremes of weather, cold, rain, snow, etc. Even though we've had more violent weather, the actual temperature of the Earth is increasing. Now, it's all a paradox. Weather is a big mystery. When the temperature of the Earth increases, what happens is there's something called a heat engine. I'm going to show this in a little different way. Here's the equator. The maximum rays of the sun, of course, hit the Earth from about 23 degrees latitude north and south. And this heat is absorbed largely by the oceans. And that sets up the summer tropical currents going north. So you have these huge heat waves going north, pumping not only heat but moisture going northward. And for every gram of water, it takes 600 calories of heat. And you can imagine if the sun causes the water to vaporize from the surface of the Earth, this enormous amount of heat, we're talking about millions and millions of tons of water being moved north, is moved north, and this causes, of course, hurricane weather at this time of the year, August and September and October, we'll be seeing a hurricane, because of the vast amount of heat that builds up not only northward, but upward into the atmosphere. And then, of course, this turning up the heat engine of the Earth brings a lot of moisture up to the north, and we have the polar effects, more ice accumulates depending on which pole you're at, which season. And this simply is like a water kettle that's boiling harder and harder. This greenhouse effect results in this trapping of heat pushing up in this boundary layer here, and then come winter time with all the accumulated moisture up here, you have moisture dumped in large quantities in certain parts of the planet. And the monsoon rains have been absolutely excessive. I don't know how many of you have been in India, I guess John has and so on, but they've had throughout the area where monsoons are common features from India all the way over to Malaysia and Indonesia, the monsoons have flooded out millions and millions of acres of crops. A loss of life is just uncounted because they don't have a good way of counting in that part of the world. And so this part of the world has taken a terrible shellacking with excessive rain. And this part of the world where we are has taken a shellacking with excessive rain, excessive snow, flooding, etc. Okay, these are one, two, and then we have, I think you really want to know the answer to the third part, that the Russians cooling around here. Here the Russians with their 700 megawatt transmitters, which broadcast on a frequency of very low, as I indicated yesterday, about 611 cycle hertz. And they pump this energy. Usually they use two of these great ELF. I'll just put all these words down so they stick in your mind. ELF means extremely low frequency. It's usually the frequency band from about 100 to 100 cycles. So what they do is they pump the energy into the Earth. Now pumping the energy into the Earth aggravates the already full, I think of this as a boil, that's full of negativity from human activity down here, and it's trying to get out through various vents and cracks. So they're aggravating this. Let me explain this very carefully, particularly to the physicists. There is an industrial process. One of the big problems in industry is when you make big castings, whether it's aluminum or cast iron or whatever, when they shrink, they tend to crack, or when they cool off. And somebody, I forget who, invented a method so that if you have a big casting with all kind of funny arms and lumps on it, it could be 10 feet tall, when you run alternating current through it, It has an effect which has still not been explained physically, of ordering the molecules in such a way or distributing the heat motion amongst the molecules so that they uniformly cool. Instead of this tip cooling faster than, let's say, this part, they cool uniformly. And that alternating current effect is used throughout industry to prevent cracking and castings. Well, you're looking at a situation that's very similar. At the center of the Earth is presumably a liquid core of nickel and iron and heavy elements like that, very high temperatures. And so when you put the alternating current, which is very low frequency, into the Earth, you cause a cooling effect, and that heat must escape some way, like here, even though it's uniform cooling, and so you have an acceleration of heat loss from the center of the Earth. This is one of the effects, and this is part of the mechanism of inducing earthquakes. Anyway, this energy goes through, bounces back, as I showed you, and there are preferred paths for the energy to oscillate and cause certain effects. But one of the effects, and I'll try to show you how this works, is the effect on the weather. Forget that we are looking at the side part of the Earth through a top section, and let's say that we're looking down, and this is now the North Pole. What had happened with the Soviet signal with weather was this heat engine that pumps up heat. And let's see, let me give you some landmarks. So let's say this is Alaska here. What happened was that the heat engine was accelerated, and it's a little complicated. First, high pressure wells were set up like this, and three of them were set up like this. And this you can examine on satellite photographs and satisfy yourself that this did indeed occur. One high pressure, and the reason these high pressure walls occur, and this was discovered by some Canadian researchers, was that if you modulate the magnetic field of the Earth, and that's what this alternating current does, modulating the magnetic field of the Earth tends to produce low pressure areas and high pressure areas. In this particular case, it produced a high pressure wall here, a high pressure wall here, and a high pressure wall here. So this is Alaska, this is North America running down like this, and South America all the way over here, like this. There was, starting in 1977, there was a high pressure wall off the coast of North America, which you could see on any satellite photo. And this prevented the heat engine air from going here into the United States. So you had a terrible drought. You remember that in 77 and 78, all throughout the western part of North America. And the heat engine pumped the energy up toward Alaska and then came down and dumped huge amounts of snow on Buffalo in the winter of 77 and 78. So this is what the Soviet signal did. The same thing happened over Europe, but this line ran about through Poland. And so Western Europe over here had drought during that period, the same as we had here. But on the other side here, the heat engine brought up all this moisture by this mechanism and dumped it on Soviet Union and Poland. They had wiped out of their crops. I mean, they lost something like 30 million metric tons of grain just because of this mechanism. And then if the Indian subcontinent is over on this side, and the area I indicated earlier, they got all the monsoon rains because the heat engine was activated and dumped all the rain. So that's how the ELF affected the weather. This could go on and on because it's a very complex subject, but those are the essential mechanisms. Or to review it in summary, one, let's say, is the Earth interior, okay? The interior mechanism, which we're still living with because now we're not getting so many earthquakes, we're getting volcanoes, which means that Many, many cubic miles of volcanic dust are thrown into the atmosphere by this mechanism. And you know about El Chinchon in Mexico and the big volcano in Indonesia, which erupted recently. And of course, Mount St. Helens is just a local little Disneyland phenomenon. It's not very important. But enough volcanic dust has come up into the air now to start a cooling trend counter to the carbon dioxide greenhouse effect. So all these multi-factors become very confusing in predicting the outcome. Anyway, number two then is the atmospheric greenhouse effect, which includes more than just heat trap, and it includes the catalytic action on nitrous oxide. Incidentally, most of this comes from fertilizers, in case you're not aware of it. There's an enormous use of nitrates in all over the world now. And the fertilizers fall on the ground and then they evaporate, rise to this area. It's not just fluorocarbons, you know, the underarm spritz stuff that people got so excited about. And that in turn has a destructive catalytic effect on ozone, and that in turn profoundly affects living things. And so you have very bizarre effects going on. And these, incidentally, aren't effects that have been observed just because we have satellites and just because we have technology. These things are really new in terms of, there are a lot of ways you can analyze this from tree ring data, for example. You can go back 6,000 years and reconstruct a lot of these weather patterns. And the third one, of course, is the monkeying around of the Soviet ELF. And I'm sorry to say that the U.S. is about ready to go on the air with its ELF transmitters down here in the New Zealand, Australia, South Africa area, opposite to the array of ELF transmitters there. So the war and counter-war is probably going to compound this whole phenomenon. There's not a damn thing any of us can do about it, because it's a big military battle. The titans are at work. And then, of course, the fourth factor, which I've gone over yesterday, is outside or extraterrestrial intervention. Okay? So these are the factors that we know about. And that's a very, very skimpy, simplified picture of a very complicated giant heat engine. Did you want to ask a question?
You just talked about the method that the U.S. could maybe possibly change the warfare for the ELF situation. Is it possible that we broadcast at 8 hertz that the Russians would feel good enough that
I don't think you can answer the question better than I. It's all a lot of madness. I'll give you an example of how mad it is. I was at a representative from Canada at the United Nations conference in Montreal in, I think it was December of 79, and the news came over the wires right in the middle of the conference when the Soviets were talking about, not about ELF because they deny it exists, but they were talking about some related weather phenomena. And what had happened was that down here at southern Africa, the characteristic double pulse, double light pulse of an atomic bomb had been seen in the atmosphere, okay? And so the Americans' conference screamed that the South Africans had released a nuclear bomb. And the Soviets said that the U.S. was doing something, but they weren't. They were a little vague about it because they didn't want to incriminate themselves. What actually happened after reconstructing the thing about a year later was that the observatory in Puerto Rico at Arecibo had picked up a gravitational pulse, very unusual on Earth, from the region of South Africa, and coincidentally, the satellites had picked up the double pulse of a nuclear explosion. So that was the whole guessing game, that it was either a nuclear explosion or was some kind of gravity anomaly, something like the Tunguska-Siberia explosion that nobody's ever been able to explain. And then other local signals were picked up, but what nobody noticed was that there was a big ELF signal going on at that particular time. And the real fact is that the United States, and this is all big classified stuff, but if you talk to people in South Africa, you can find out like that. We have, the U.S. has a ELF generator here, and it was under test at this period. And what happened was they built up one of these big signals and got a ball lightning effect, very much like in the Belle Isle situation, which incidentally also, I didn't mention this yesterday, produced for the satellites a double pulse. And Thomas Gold of Cornell and a whole crew ran up there to see what this was, because the signal certainly looked like a nuclear bomb. So anyway, that thing was really picked up inadvertently, and that gave away the American experiments with ELFs to counter the other thing. Now, all the frequencies and what the intent is, I really don't have any idea, because I'm not privy to any of that stuff. I can only pick up the data after the event has occurred, but not before. So I don't really know what the intent of all this stuff is. At the same time, while all this stuff is going on in the southern hemisphere, we're making big noises, as you know, about the Seafarer program. That's something else. That's a 35 or 70 pulse per second signal that is encoded to communicate with submarines all over the Earth that are underwater. All very confusing, I'm sure, but this is the answer to your question. Okay, is everybody here then? I can go ahead. Is Iona here somewhere? No, she hasn't got here. Anyway, brought something up. So let me go ahead with the kind of formal presentation I had in mind. Are we pretty much at equilibrium now? I mean, we're not fighting each other in terms of some of these weird ideas I've dumped on you? Or do you still have some burning questions that you want to get off your chest? Okay? What I'm going to do, since what I gave in the Sunday lecture is only a brief synopsis of the clock messages. Does anybody, everybody here now know what the clock messages are? Do I have to repeat that? Okay, everybody knows. This is the clock in question. This is the one that stops at 45 minutes after the hour. This is the one that I read off the angle. The angle gives me a letter or a number, as you know in Hebrew. And it slowly grinds out. It's been running or delivering messages continuously from that day in August 18th, I believe, 1971, until now. The messages just keep dropping in. And there's some people in this room will testify that when we get together in a working association, that their clock starts stopping and starting, and they feed their signal into the overall pool. If I had to do a head count, I would say there are about 9 or 10 people on the planet who get the clock stops now, and they always send them to me, and I keep track of it. So just to give you an idea, somebody down in South America will get a clock message, and they'll note the date, the time, everything, send it to me. Somebody in Israel, wherever Israel is here, will get clock stops, somebody in England, somebody in various parts of the United States, and then I put them in sequential order, and I'm the only one who knows what the final translation of the information is. So it's just not me that gets clock messages. Initially, it was only myself, but somehow this, like the metal bending that I described, is spreading. Maybe they'll have clock stopping parties at the Pentagon next. Yes?
Are you saying now that the message is spread to the United people, that one single message might contain or might require information to all these people?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
It's orchestrated on a big scale. And most of the messages are impersonal. I just wanted to make that clear. Very rarely does it tell you to do something about tiny shoeboxes or something. It usually has to do with the progression of getting into the new age. And there are two parts of the new age, the wipe out of the old age, which is kind of a funereal function I'm not particularly interested in, because that's governments and all these people are set up to do that. I'm interested in the birth of the new age, the birth of the new people who are coming, and the birth of a whole new way of living, a new civilization. That's what I'm interested in. Okay, I'm going to go over the material from the beginning, and what I will do is, as I say, I hope this word spreads person to person. I don't think this is the kind of thing that should go broadcast over networks and so on. It's too esoteric. Whenever I read from the actual clock messages, I will say, quote, unquote, that there'll be a lot of commentary to explain this very terse language. So I will begin from the beginning. Quote, and just to give you a reference date, this particular message started on October 7th, 1975. Quote, this is the book of seven seals of Tav. Tav, I told you, is equivalent to the Omega of the Christian Bible. I forgot to give myself an unquote there. Sorry, I'm going to start again. Quote, this is the book of seven seals of Tav. Tav is the Greek, I mean the Hebrew letter. For those of you who don't know all these Hebrew letters, I'm going to put them up here once and for all so you can refer to them. Tav goes like this. And you always read in this direction. The Alpha or Aleph goes like this. Okay? And there'll be more, and I'll add those. But these are the two, or the three principals who are giving these messages. Once again, quote, this is the book of seven seals of Tav, and it will be opened within 56 days. End quote. 56 days would be December 1st, 1975. Quote, the season of harvest and of labor pains begins for the earth, as it is written. It begins in this year, and that's signed Tav, unquote. Now, those terse sentences, there are two key words there. Harvest. Labor pain. Harvest is the harvest of the last 6,000 years of evolution of mankind. Those souls who have made it in terms of becoming more spiritual than material are the ones who are going to go on into the New Age. The New Age has labor pains. Labor pains is like biological labor pains having babies. But it's also, you remember the diagram of the earth, and the negative energy and the heat and the cracks of the earth throwing off the energy, the negative energy, which is really one of the basic causes behind what we see as weather changes. It's the earth being purified. And I might jump way ahead of where I am and tell you that when the final purification of the earth occurs, because you cannot have new life, advanced life, come to an earth that's still polluted, at some point, our earth will be dematerialized, but you'll scarcely know it, so that the last of the impurities are shed off and then it will rematerialize. Whether it will be in the same solar orbit that we're in now, I don't know. I have suspicion we may shift to a different solar system entirely because the conditions for the new life are not fully satisfied or met within the solar system that we live in. But that's for the future, but I want to mention these are the possibilities. So we're dealing in most of these messages with either the harvest problem or the labor pains, and they're both...